this week served as a good reminder for the UFC fighters as to what the UFC as an organization thinks of them. We started off with Dana White giving a $250,000 gift to the, the Nelk Boys, one of them, for a birthday gift. And then we went into the UFC not giving Nate Diaz a fight or not letting him out of his contract, however you want to look at that. We went into the UFC lobbying against labor practices that would help the UFC fighters. And then we finished off the week with the ESPN deal hiking the price significantly starting later this year. And again, that you can say that that's not related to the UFC, but you would be wrong because it most definitely is related to the UFC. So I want to start off with the Nelk Boys thing with $250,000gift. I saw Darren Till said that, and this is a good starting point for this. I saw Darren Till say that we shouldn't care about this because it's Dana White's money. And in the big picture, I guess that's right. It is Dana White's money. But where that money came from is off the backs of the fighters. And when you're not paying the fighters even remotely close to what you gave that social media influencer as a gift, even if it was kind of a stage setup thing, which I'm thinking it wasn't, but it might have been. But the appearance is that he's just throwing $250,000 into this guy's hands for whatever. It's a bad look. And it shows the UFC fighters that, you know, you're not really worth anything, but I'm going to give this guy $250,000. And I saw I heard Bomani Jones on his podcast say that salaries to athletes are show respect or disrespect. And in this case, this is a show of disrespect, because while fighters start at $10,000 or $12,000 a fight, and I'm going to say the majority of the UFC roster will never sniff a payday even close to $250,000. This is just a gift to somebody, just pissing away $250,000. It's a bad look, and it's a disrespectful look towards the fighter. And to say that it's his money, while that is technically correct, that money came off the back, off the blood, off the long-term health of these UFC fighters. So, yeah, it's his money, but at what cost? And to just throw it around like that, again, disrespectful, and shows the UFC fighters that they are more or less meaningless to the UFC. As long as that money keeps rolling in, you don't mean anything. The lobbying thing, this is from a story from Bloody Elbow, and the UFC spent $240,000 over the final two quarters of 2021 lobbying against two bills, H.R. 842 and S-420. Basically the same bills. One's in the House of Representatives, one's in the Senate. And both brought to the table from Democrats. The House of Representatives bill is, quote, expands various labor protections related to employees' rights to organize and collectively bargain in the workplace. And the bill in the Senate is the same thing. And there's also revisions in the bill of official definitions of employee, supervisor, and employer. The bills seek to broaden the scopes of these terms. And here is a quote from the bill from the story. An individual performing any service shall be considered an employee and not an independent contractor unless the individual is free from control and direction in connection with the performance of the service, both under the contract for the performance of service and in fact. The service is performed outside the usual course of the business of the employer, and the individual is customarily engaged in an independently established trade, occupation, profession, or business of the same nature as that involved in the service performed. And so more or less, the UFC is lobbying against these expanded workplace rights and workplace definitions because it does not want to be forced or, well, yeah, it does not want to be forced to make its fighters employees. And again, this is something that I can't be stated enough or stronger, is that the UFC fighters are independent contractors. As such, they have no benefits and no rights that normal employees have. So while the UFC will say that it has health insurance, it does not. It has injury insurance that only comes into play when a fighter is under contract to fight. They've already signed that contract and now they have a fight scheduled. That's when the injury insurance kicks in. And again, that is only for injury. It's not for health. It's not if the fighter gets COVID, for an example, tough shit. If a fighter gets a broken arm, then that's going to be covered. But from what I understand, there is a high deductible, and the deductible is per incident. So if you break your arm in training, but then still keep training because you know, just say you can. So you still keep training, then you break your orbital bone. That's a separate incident. So now you have two deductibles of $1,000. So it's, yeah, it's helpful, but it's not nearly as helpful as I think the UFC would like the fans and the fighters to believe it is. And these are the things that an employer-employee relationship would cover a lot more so than an independent contractor relationship that the UFC has. And so that's the kind of thing the UFC is fighting. And that's the kind of thing that really needs to be resolved, because these fighters should be employees and should get benefits and should get better pay. But the UFC is going to fight that at every juncture it can. But it's also going to treat these fighters like employees and hold them to contracts and not let them be true independent contractors. True independent contractor would be able to spread their talents around. They wouldn't have to just fight for the UFC. They could fight for the highest bidder if they were a true independent contractor. So the UFC has a relationship right now that's kind of the best of both worlds for the promotion and the worst of both worlds for the fighters. And these bills would probably make some changes, not great changes, not incredible changes, but they would benefit the fighters. And of course, the UFC is fighting that to the tune of $240,000 over the past two quarters. So now the ESPN prices going up, this is another bad thing. And again, you can say it's not the UFC making the ESPN Plus prices go up, but you would be, I think, at least a little wrong in that thinking, because the ESPN Plus deal with the UFC calls for payments to the UFC to go up year over year. So, of course, that's going to cause the price of the product to go up. The only thing that would keep that from happening is if the subscriber base would keep increasing enough to cover the cost and cover increased profits. Even if that does happen, the ESPN can raise the prices, because that's a capitalist society, and why not keep raising the prices? We're kind of used to these subscription services raising prices year over year at this point, and so that's going to happen. And if you think the UFC didn't think that was going to happen when this deal was struck, you're crazy. They knew this was going to happen, but since they're not the ones providing the service, they can say, we're not increasing the price. And technically, they're right. They aren't the ones increasing the price. But if they're the ones causing the payment from ESPN to the UFC to go up every year, yeah, they are causing the increase in price, because the ESPN is not going to absorb that out of the goodness of their heart. They're a business, and they have to cover their costs. And so, to cover their costs, they raise the prices. They raise the prices because the UFC is contractually getting more money year over year. And so, prices are raising because USC is getting more money. Now, you're going to, some people are going to say, well, it's not just the UFC. And again, this is a, technically you're correct. But I don't need an ESPN Plus subscription to watch Major League Baseball. I don't need an ESPN Plus subscription to watch the NHL, the NFL, or the NBA. I do need an ESPN Plus subscription to watch the majority of the UFC events. So if I want to watch the UFC, I need that subscription. If I want to watch the UFC pay-per-view, I need that subscription, and I need to pay more for the pay-per-view. It's kind of a brilliant way for the UFC to keep making money and to keep ESPN raising the prices here, because you need ESPN Plus if you're a fan of the UFC and you want to watch every event, you want to watch every fight on every event. You need that. That's not the case if you're just a fan of baseball, hockey, basketball, NFL, anything else, really. And so you're kind of locked in. You're kind of at the point here now where you're captive. And are people going to shed an ESPN Plus subscription? I would say some, but that's kind of something the UFC and ESPN are looking at here. Is it going to play out that more stay than leave, and the money is going to rise in the ESPN coffers? And of course that's going to be the case. Of course more people are going to stay than leave. That's just the way it is. People are going to bitch, they're going to moan, but the majority of people are going to pay that fee. I will tell you that if this wasn't my job, if I didn't need to have this subscription, and I can write this subscription off because it is related to my job, well, I wouldn't have this. I wouldn't pay this. I wouldn't pay these fees. And the other option is, if you're just not an ESPN Plus subscription, a subscriber, the price for the bundle with, I think, Hulu and Disney, that's going to stay the same, I think. But again, that's more than just ESPN Plus. So they're kind of forcing your hand here. And you can be like, well, this price isn't raising, but I'm going to be paying more for it. It's kind of, like I said, it's kind of brilliant, but it's also kind of underhanded and gross. But to think that the UFC isn't responsible for these prices going up is short-sighted and it's incorrect. Now, I want to go back to this lobbying thing here and the ESPN, I'm sorry, the UFC fighters being employees or independent contractors. I don't know what's better for the fighters right now. I mean, I think it depends on if they're going to be true independent contractors and true employees. Then I think it's up to the fighters to really look at their situation and see where they're at in their lives and in their careers. So you take someone like Nate Diaz. So right now, I would think Nate Diaz would be better served to be a true independent contractor. That way he could fight one fight for the UFC and then shop his talents around to the highest bidder after that. And, you know, if he wants to box, he can box. If he wants to do jiu-jitsu, he can do jiu-jitsu. If he wants to fight in MMA, then the highest bidder can pay him to fight in their promotion. And for someone like Nate Diaz or John Jones or someone who's established and has a good amount of money that they've made in the past and they have a name and they have a brand, then true independent contractor is probably the best bet for them. Now, you take someone like, say, a Macy Barber. She's 24. Her goal is to be a UFC champion, and she's not making the money that would allow her to really have freedom at this point to do what she wants, or she doesn't have a brand or a name that's big enough to warrant someone else offering her a crazy amount of freelance or independent contractor pay on a one-off. And, you know, then the employer relationship might be better. But again, that's up to the individual. And I think maybe the ideal situation here is a situation like other sports have, where You have a entry-level contract, of course, higher than it already is in the UFC, and then you have a period of restrict a period that you can get arbitration and increase that pay through arbitration. If you can't come to an agreement, then you go to arbitration, and the arbitrator decides, all right, you're going to get a one-year deal, and it's going to be worth this much. And then eventually you get to the point where you're a restricted free agent, and there's limits built into those contracts and arbitration built into those contracts as well. And then through time, service, you get to the point where you're an unrestricted free agent, and the money becomes bigger, the opportunities become bigger, you can go to the highest bidder. Maybe that's the ideal situation here. I don't know ideally how this is all going to work out. If I was a betting person, I would say it's going to stay exactly as it is, because that's just the nature of capitalism. And when you have a big money firm like the UFC, they can influence laws through their lobbying efforts and by throwing their money around, and that's what happens. So I think it's going to stay the same. I think if the UFC had its druthers and it was up to them for employment, or if they were forced their hand to say, you're either going to offer them true independent contractor status or you're going to offer them employees, I think you would see the UFC reluctantly go with the employee-employer route, just because then they could keep the fighters under contract like other sports, and they would have to, you know, stay with the UFC for X amount of time. But I don't think anything's going to change here. I think it's a pipe dream that something's going to change. I think the UFC fighters know by now what the UFC thinks of them, and they also know that the UFC is vindictive, and so they'll complain about the situation as it is in the past week and how terrible it was. Some of them will complain, most of them will remain silent, but no one will do anything. And that's just kind of the boat we're in here. Yair Rodriguez has joined the I'm Not Sparring part of the MMA world, and I'm all for that. He said here recently, I'm not sparring, and that's something I've been saying for many years. I've shared it with my coaches and my training partners, and I always tell them, don't you dare touch my face. If you hit me, I'm going to hit you. That's how injuries start. That's the reason why you don't make it to the fight, because you go in there and you want to show off in the gym with someone else, and then there are injuries. So no, I'm not interested in taking hits during training. They don't pay for that. They pay me for the fight once I'm up in the cage. I try to save myself from as much impact as I can possibly have to my head. And I think this is something we're going to see more of as time moves on. And like Rodriguez said, he's not going to forget how to fight. He's established himself. He knows how to fight. Less time sparring means more time drilling, more time in your strength and conditioning, more time getting better at fighting without actually putting in the time of hard sparring. Hard sparring has its place, but it's probably very early in a career. Once you've been in the ring or the cage for a certain amount of time, you know what to expect. And even if you spar, you don't have to spar hard. You don't have to have head contact to know what it's like to get hit in the head once you've been hit in the head. And to just keep sparring just because that's the way things have always been done, that's silly. Once you're at a point in your career where you know what to expect in a fight, you know what to expect in a fight. And like Yair Rodriguez said here, you are not going to forget how to fight. And so I would like to see more of this and more fighters taking on the I'm not going to spar aspect. And the more we see of that, I think the longer careers will last. Robert Whittaker had some interesting things to say about Israel Adesanya and Adesanya's fight with Cannonier and fans. So I think he was somewhat okay with how the fight played out, because he's a fighter and he could appreciate what goes into a fight. But then he also kind of said that, hey, I understand the fans' point of view because there was a big build-up to this. And okay, but are fans really this silly to believe that everything spoken in a press conference, all the words between fighters leading up to a fight, are they that you know, focused in on that, that they believe this is really what's going to happen. So you get a lot of trash talking, you get a lot of people, you know, for example, I'm literally going to kill you. That's the kind of thing that gets said during a press conference. And are fans disappointed when someone, and maybe some are disappointed when someone doesn't literally kill the other guy. But trash talk and build up to a fight, I don't think you can really take that too seriously and become disappointed in the outcome of a fight if it didn't live up to the trash talk. I'm sorry. I just don't buy that. I don't buy that the trash talk is what you're going to get in the fight. It's just not the case for the most part. We know how these fighters fight by now. We know what they bring with them. And, you know, if you don't like how Israel Adesanya fights, great. Don't watch him fight. If you want to watch him fight and you're disappointed in the outcome, well, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it works. You're not gonna get what you want all the time. Do you deserve it? No, because that fighter needs to be true to themselves and fight for themselves more than they need to fight for the fans or to even, you know, live up to their fans' expectations. I'm sorry, but I think the fighters need to fight, and especially in the champions, they need to fight in a way that they're going to keep the belt and keep making as much money as they can. Champions need to do that. And that's just the way it is. Unless the UFC changes its pay structure, that's how it's going to be. And so more often than not, you're going to get a champion fighting safe. Because the important thing as a champion is to hold on to that title for as long as possible. Nate Diaz did a long, long, long interview with Ariel Helwani, and I just want to hit some points here. I thought it was interesting. It was kind of all over the place, but that's kind of what you're going to get in a Nate Diaz interview. But while it's all over the place, you should still be able to pick out a few things that are relevant and are meaningful. And I think there was a lot of things in this interview that were relevant and meaningful. I think that what we see here, big picture with Nate Diaz, is he wants out of his contract because he wants to pursue the Nate Diaz brand. He has become a brand at this point, and that's, you know, good for him. And so he said in the interview, I want to box, I want to do jiu-jitsu, I want to do individual sports more than right now, more than I want to do the whole shebang. I don't want to be an MMA fighter right now. I want to be a boxer. I want to be a jiu-jitsu player. I want to focus in on certain things and do that, because that's what he's going to get enjoyment from at this point in his life and in his career. He's also said that he wants to pop back into the UFC when the opportunities are there for him to, you know, fight some interesting fights. Right now, he doesn't see any interesting fights. But he did say that when the UFC offered him the Chimaev fight, he was initially, you know, against it because he saw it as the way for the UFC to build a fighter off him, his name. And he pointed out that this has been kind of the case over the past few years, or past many years, that the UFC takes the Nate Diaz brand, Nate Diaz's name, and builds a fighter off of him. The first example of that was Josh Thompson. Thompson, I think, scored a knockout over Diaz, and that built up Thompson. There was the Gray Maynard thing, built up Maynard. Jorge Masvidal, BMF fight, built up Masvidal. McGregor was already McGregor, but that's a separate thing. But it also ties into this picture because the UFC wants McGregor to come back and fight Diaz to get him back in the swing of things, to get a big fight for Conor McGregor right out of the gate, right back into action. The trilogy fight, big seller, everyone will tune in. Will everyone tune in to a Conor McGregor, I don't know, Michael Chandler fight? plenty of people will just because Conor McGregor is there, but you don't have a two-way booking there. You have a Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler. If you have Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, you have Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz. Build it up, third time, history, and they are two of the biggest names in the UFC right now. Chandler's a big name. I'm not saying he's not a big name, but Michael Chandler, even though he's at a point in his career where he's a lot closer to the title fight than Nate Diaz is, Nate Diaz is a bigger name than Michael Chandler. I'm sorry, just the way it is. And so Diaz sees this as what it is the UFC wants to build a fighter off of him. And it would have been the same with Chimaev, and he said he was, now it's the reason he was against the Chimaev fight initially, but he came around, and he came around because if he accepted the fight, he'd be out of his contract after the fight. But that fell apart, and now it's the McGregor thing, or bust by the sounds of things, and from what Diaz said, he's not interested in the McGregor fight right now because McGregor's not where he was, and Diaz remains where he is. And, okay, I see that. But this is where I get a little lost in this whole scenario. And this, I think, is where Nate Diaz becomes a little too Nate Diaz for his own good. So if he would accept the McGregor fight, if that's what the UFC is really pushing and that's what it's going to do and that's what it's going to quote-unquote force him to do before it lets him out of his contract, well then, take the fight and move on. Get out of your contract and then go do what you want to do. He said he wants to maybe box Jake Paul, maybe grapple Gordon Ryan, maybe fight Triple G, which don't do that last one. And then move on and then pop back into the UFC when something is interesting to him. Again, he wants to be the Nate Diaz brand. I'm all for that. I think that's the right move. But again, he's being a little too Nate Diaz for Nate Diaz's good here in not taking the UFC fight with Conor McGregor. If he takes it, he's done. He'll get a big payday. He'll be out. And then he'll pop back in when he wants to, or move on, fight, do something else, make a lot of money. But I understand why Diaz doesn't want to do this, because it's kind of the Diaz way. I want what I want on my terms, and if you want this so bad, I'm not going to give it to you. I appreciate that. I respect that. Something I have done, but not to this point, not where it's affecting, where it would affect my life for years, because UFC can keep him locked up here. And like he said, he's not going to go to court over this because that's one, that's not his style, and two, he doesn't have the money the UFC has. They could lock him up and tie him up for years before this even goes to be heard. And then what was the point? He lost money. He lost time. And so, better to get it over with. But dragging his feet here with the McGregor thing isn't going to help him either, because if that's what the UFC wants, kind of what the UFC is going to get sooner or later. And so, I think Nate Diaz, for his own sake, is going to have to, take the offer here at some point, and I would say take it sooner rather than later, because the UFC has too much power over the fighters. It has too much money to get into a legal battle with that you have no hope of winning. And the safest and easiest route is to just say, okay, I'll fight Conor McGregor at this rate, take the pay, and then move on and do what you want to do. But again, I understand and I respect the fact that he is not willing to do that. But if he wants out of the contract, sooner or later, he is going to have to do that. And so, just for the sake of getting out of that deal, do it sooner rather than later. It's just the way it's going to have to work out. Sorry, but UFC has too much power right now to for Nate Diaz or anyone to do anything else, because as we've seen, UFC is just going to wait you out, just put you on ice until you do what it wants. It has that money, it has that power, and until something changes in the employee independent contractor status and the contract status, that's just the way it's going to be. So Nate Diaz, sooner or later, he's just going to have to say yes to the McGregor fight and then move on. Sorry, but that's just the way it's going to be.